chest desire to possess them. Generated next was the Parijata flower, which decorated the celestial planets. O King, as you fulfill the desires of everyone on this planet by fulfilling all ambitions, the Parijata fulfill the desires of everyone. Text number 7. Tatashchapsaraso jata nishkakantya swavashasha ramanya swarginam vagu gati lila valokanai. Translation. Next, there appear the apsaras, who were used as prostitutes on the heavenly planets. They were fully decorated with golden ornaments and lockets, and were dressed in fine and attractive clothing. The apsaras moved very slowly in an attractive style that bewilders the inhabitants of the heavenly planets. Text number 8. And this we can read together. Tatascha virabhup shakshat Sri Rama Bhagavat para Ranjajanti disha kantya Vidyut sauda manijata Tatascha virabhuk chakshat Sri Rama Bhagavat para Rajanjanti disha kantya Vidyut saumadaman Vidyut sauda manijata Tatascha virabhuk chakshat Sri Rama Bhagavat param Ranjajanti disha kantya Vidyut sauda manijata. Please chant. Tataha, thereafter, cha, an, avirabhut, manifested, shakshat, directly, Sri, the goddess of fortune, Rama, known as Rama, Bhagavat para, absolutely inclined to be possessed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ranjajanti, illuminating, Disha, all directions, Kantya, by luster, Vidyut, lightning, Saudamani, Yata, as. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Then thereafter the goddess of fortune, Rama, who is absolutely dedicated to being enjoyed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she appeared like electricity, surpassing the lightning that might illuminate a marble mountain. Purport. Sri means opulence. Krishna is the owner of all opulences. Bhaktaran jagyata pasham sarvaloka maheshwaram sruhidam sarvabhutanam yatva man chantin rishchati. This peace formula for the world is given in the Bhagavad Gita 5:29. When people know that the Supreme Lord Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, the supreme proprietor, and the most intimate well-wishing friend of all living entities, peace and prosperity will ensue all over the world. Unfortunately, the conditioned souls being placed into illusion by the external energy of the Lord want to fight with one another, and therefore peace is disturbed. The first prerequisite for peace is that all the wealth presented by Sri, the goddess of fortune, be offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everyone should give up his full proprietorship over worldly possessions and offer everything to Krishna. This is the teaching of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Namo Vishupadaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swamin Iti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvesesha Shunyabadi Pashatyada Shatarine Bancha Kalpa Taruvya Shakripa Sindhu Vyayva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So, the treasures from the churning of the ocean of milk, they start to be enumerated. I remember hearing that there are 14 of these treasures, and several of them has been set up here. The first one was the Surabhi cow, and then the second that appears was this amazing powerful horse named Uchaishrava. Now, Krishna mentioned this horse in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 10. Anyone remember the instance? In chapter 10, when Arjuna asked Krishna, please tell me more about your opulences, then Krishna says, of horses I am Uchaishrava. And he also say the next treasure that appeared of this ocean was the king of elephants, Airavata. So he says, of elephants, I'm Airavata. This is in the same verse. So all these treasures that come from the ocean of the churning of the ocean of milk, they're the best of, you know, whatever they are, you know, the best of gems we hear is the kostuba, the best of elephant like that, the best of the best. And those are manifestations of Krishna's opulences. They're extensions, you know, or, yeah, manifestations of Krishna's opulences. There is another instance that every time Krishna is asked, at least there is two instances that I know that Krishna is being asked about, tell me about your opulences. That one was Arjuna, and the other one was Uddhava. In the 11th canto, which is part of the Uddhava Gita, Uddhava also asked Krishna the same question. Please kindly tell me about your opulences. And in both instances, he mentioned Uchishrava as a representative of his opulences. So one one I think fascinating point of this pastime is that you have demons and demigods just observing these amazing treasures coming of the ocean of milk, the churning. And naturally, they're very attractive. So you can imagine, you know, I mean, because remember that they're making a truce. They made almost like a political arrangement to work together, although they cannot work together. They're you know, opposing parties like that. But they have to sort of be very calculative, like in politics. People, you know, you have countries that make some sort of a truce, and they're in one space together. The United Nations. They come all together, and they sit together, and they, you know, sort of relate to each other like that. But when you come down to each one's agendas, you know, they have these sort of intrigues. They all know that, you know, someone is spying on this, someone is trying to hack on that, someone is trying to, you know, to have things to their advantages. So it's all very calculative. And diplomacy means, you know, that you try to sort of hide your agenda and just engage in niceties that not necessarily are truth, you know. That in fact you have a conflicting interest, and the fact is that, you know, you want your interest to be first. So all these treasures, and they have to be very calculative. What was the main treasure that they won out of the ocean of milk? It was this nectar of immortality. That was why the demons decided, okay, we can work together because we want that. Now, the whole idea when you work together is that you have equal benefit of the treasures that will come. But that's not necessarily how the demons were thinking, neither the demigods. Just the beginning of when Lord Vishnu was advising the demigods, you know, this is how you're going to gain back your position and the heavenly kingdom. This is how you're going to deal with that. And basically the whole idea Prabhupada explained was this idea of the snake and the mouse, right? Caught in the basket. So basically you make a truce and you work together, But at the end, your aim was, you know, I'm going to swallow the mouse. So it's tricky. That's how politics is, you know. But the demons also thinking that we want that for ourselves. You don't want to necessarily share with your enemy. So their focus was this great nectar of immortality. Now, all these things are coming, and there are certain things that were very attractive to the demons, and they wanted it. But the main thing that their focus, the main aim, was that nectar of immortality. So, you know, so they can live with the things, you know, okay, if the demigods takes that, you know, I mean, fine. But one for sure, some of them, they didn't care. One is the Surabhi cow. They didn't care about much about the Surabhi cow, which was like, wow, you know, I mean, this is a kamadenu, that a wish fulfilling, you know, being, the Surabhi. But the demons, they don't really care about the cow, but a horse, that was very attractive, because a horse is a very powerful being, you know, is fast, is very attractive. Somehow or other, you know, horse is very appealing to demons, you know, people in general, but, you know, but especially demons, because, you know, I guess, like, you know, a demon doesn't care so much, or demoniac mentality, let's not say a demon, but demoniac mentality doesn't care much about, you know, some simple vehicle, like, you know, some simple vehicle. For a fast car, oh my God, a fast car is like, you know, one of those Lamborghini or one of those creations, you know, that's really appealing. So if you want to really, you know, show your status, you don't go around in a simple, you know, car, you know, like that, you know. You go around in this big, fast car, so you see this simple, not very educated, not very sort of qualified sport heroes, you know, sports stars. They just have, you know, physical qualities, and they're able to, you know, by athleticism, have, you know, receive a lot of money, because that's how, you know, the entertainment industry is like this, is in this culture. So you see simple people that, you know, come from very simple backgrounds, that they don't have, they grew up with not much possessions and not much education, and as soon as they get money from, you know, their athleticism, the first thing that they do in general is they buy a huge fast car, and they have a collection of fast cars. So it's very attractive. So a horse at that time, you know, there's a cow, there's a horse, a cow, you know, this animal is useless, just, you know, just like eating grass and, you know, like slow, and, you know, what is it can do? Milk, you know, anything. But a horse is very attractive. So Uchishrava was immediately attracted, and Bali Maharaj took it. Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons, and Bali Maharaj took possession of Uchishrava. And it's explained here that Indra wanted it too. You know, Indra wanted, but you couldn't you know, there's all these treasures, but you cannot take, you know, you have to be, you know, okay, one for you, like that type of thing. It's not that, oh for me, oh for me, yeah, like that. You know, you have to be controlled. So, and Lord Vishnu, he advised the demigods first, there's going to be treasures created for this. You just don't show attachment to them. You be very detached. So do not, you know, indulge in this sort of, yes, I want it. You know, I can take that. So Indra didn't protest. And he served well Indra because the next was Airavata, which is this powerful elephant, four tusks, and the king of all elephants. And then Lord Indra took that. So another interesting thing is that the mention of Bali Maharaj is there, and there's a lot of, you know, many of the pasans that we hear in there are very connected, because in the previous canto we heard the pasans of Prahlad Maharaj. And Prahlad Maharaj became the king of the Daitas, the king of the demons. And obviously, we know Prahlad Maharaj is among the most celebrated devotees of the Lord. And although he became the king of the demons, you know, which is quite fascinating too. The son of Prahlad Maharaj was, what was the name of the son of Prahlad Maharaj? Bali is a grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, but the son of Prahlad Maharaj was it's on my head. I can't remember immediately, but I forgot. But Prahlad Maharaj's son became the emperor of the demons, and he had this benediction that he had this golden helmet, that as long as he wear that golden helmet, he could not be killed by anyone. He was, you know, very powerful. And obviously the demigods were very nervous about that, so they tricked him by appearing in form of brahmanas. And then, you know, these were just as Prahlad Maharaj, they were very honorable. And the brahmanas asked, the demigods in disguise of brahmanas asked the son of Prahlad Maharaj to give the crown in as an offer, like that. And he did that, and he was killed. So Bali Maharaj was very, very angry, and he vowed to actually destroy the demigods. And then during this time when Indra insulted or disregard the garland that was offered by, what was the sage that offered the garland? No, it was not Durvasa. It was Durvasa. Yes, he offered, and then he was cursed. Then Bali Maharaj took charge of the whole heavenly kingdom. And then we're going to hear in the next canto, we're going to hear about Vamana. And Lord Vamana Dev appeared basically to take, well, how it goes like this. So in this particular pastime, then Bali takes charge of the whole universe, including the heavenly kingdom. Then after this, after the incarnation of Mohini, the demigods get charge of that nectar of immortality, then they were able to basically destroy the demon's army and kill Bali Maharaj. They kill Bali Maharaj, and the rest of the defeated armies of the demons take Bali Maharaj back to Shukracharya, who have the capacity to revive people from the dead. So he revived Bali Maharaj, and Bali Maharaj again perform all kinds of series of sacrifices, become very powerful, gain some weapons that made him basically invisible, and he defeated again Indra and took charge of the whole universe. And then appears Lord Vamanadev for the purpose of gaining back the whole kingdom of heaven. And the story goes, when Vamanadev appear, this is a very interesting thing of, you know, the glories of Bali Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj told Bali, Vamanadev appear and he's gonna defeat and take away everything from you and give him back to the Vamanadev is Lord Vishnu, and he appears for the purpose of taking back everything to the demigods. And Bali Maharaj, he said, Vishnu, who's this Vishnu? What is this Vishnu? He can even, what is he in front of the great armies of the demons and myself? So, and then Prahlad Maharaj were very insulted by that offense towards Lord Vishnu, that he cursed Bali, his own grandson, to lose everything and all his prestige and everything. And Bali Maharaj realized the offense, and then he begged Prahlad Maharaj to forgive him. And then Prahlad Maharaj says that Lord Vishnu will always protect him. So then the pastime goes, Lord Vamana appears. Then he asked for 3 steps, then in 2 steps he took the whole creation, and then arrested Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj ordered his troops not to fight, and then Bali Maharaj offered himself and his head for the 3rd step. And he became celebrated by that as the example of Atmanivedana, attaining perfection by surrendering everything to the Supreme Lord. And also is celebrated as one of the 12 Mahayans. So the fact is that the scriptures tell us that Bali Maharaj received greater mercy that Indra himself. So Bali Maharaj is a very important personality, and he's introduced here taking charge of the horse. And another treasures that appears were the Kostubha Mani and the Padmaraga Mani. And one of the things that the Kostubha Mani is, Krishna also mentioned of jewels, and the Kostubha is a king of jewels. And there is an instance in the scriptures that it says that Lord Shiva explains that this Kostubha is so brilliant and so powerful that only Lord Vishnu can hold it and can manage it. That is explained, so if anyone will take this jewel, it will be influenced, you know, it will be consumed by greed. But Lord Vishnu is the only personality who can withhold the power of this jewel. So Lord Vishnu, this jewel is celebrated as the ornament in Lord Vishnu's chest, the Kaustubha Mani. And then there's the Parijata tree that is also a wish fulfilling tree, a Kalpa Vriksha, and it's a tree that only appears in the heavenly planets, in fact in the planet of Indra and in Indra Loka. And we know the pastime of Krishna taking the Parijata tree from the heavenly planets, and Indra becoming all insulted about it, and then he got put in his place as usual by Krishna. But so same thing. So all of these things appearing, well, the demons didn't care about a tree. You know, we're looking about this nectar, these demigods, they can get distracted with this lower sort of type of treasures, you know, a cow, a tree, you know, who cares about that? You know. But then then the Apsaras comes, which is the heavenly damsels, you know, that are famous for their beauty. And what's the name of the Apsara who was cursed to become a stone and was going to be free by Lord Ramachandra's Ramba, then Menaka, the famous Menaka that goes, you know, and every time some great personality is doing, you know, austerities, then Indra sends Menaka to distract them and then entice them out of their, you know, so Menaka goes and then do the tinkly, 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 you know, and then the great sage, you know, goes like, oh, the whole thing is finished. It happens to be Shramita Muni, like that. So these are the Apsaras, and somehow you may think that the demons will be very attractive to the Apsaras, but you know, they became part of the demigods, you know, the damsels of the demigods. But then now appears the goddess of fortune. So now we're going to hear an elaborated narration, actually almost to the end of this chapter, of the glories of the goddess of fortune. The fact that now the goddess of fortune, she was very attractive, most attractive to the demons and demigods. So she's going to be worshipped, you know. So the following verses explaining great detail the worship of the goddess of the fortune. But there's one very specific thing that is expressed, that is in this verse, that she's absolutely dedicated to being enjoyed by the personality of Godhead. So the goddess of fortune is exclusively meant for the personality of Godhead, the Supreme Person. So, and it will become, you know, clear as the goddess of fortune will choose, she as after the worship, after her worship, she choose Lord Vishnu as her consort. So everybody accepted it. So, like that. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, he brings, you know, the most important principle to be prosperous and happy, peaceful in this world. You know, Prabhupada famously, he quoted, you know, this as the peace formula. And there's a famous verse, the last verse of the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktaram Jagyata Pasham Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Shuhidam. 5th chapter, not the 8th chapter, the 5th chapter. Bhaktaram Jagyata Pasham Sarvaloka Shuhidam Sarvabhutanam Gyattam Man Chantim Richati. That to be peaceful, one has to understand that everything valuable belongs to the personality of Godhead and is meant for the personality of Godhead. Everything that is valuable, everything that is a fortune is meant for the personality of Godhead. And when that's in place, when one understands Krishna as the enjoyer of everything that is fortunate, that everything that comes out of one's work, everything valuable is meant for his enjoyment, that he is the owner of everything and he is the best well-wisher of everyone, when we understand that individually as in a society, then there's peace and there's prosperity. But the problem in this world, Prabhupada explains, that people are claiming proprietorship, claiming that things are meant for their enjoyment, and therefore they have to be conflict. There's fighting. So the common ground that is there is that we all meant for the enjoyment of God. And that's the place of peace, that's the place of fortune, and that is the place of prosperity. It is always explained that the demons wants to, the demonic mentality, the demonic mentality is exemplified by this desire to take the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, from Krishna. So, and that's, you know, epitomized by Ravana kidnapping Sita Devi. So the demonic mentality wants to take this property of the Lord for their own enjoyment. And Krishna comes and takes away, you know. So Krishna consciousness is, Prabhupada say, the process of Krishna consciousness is to be in this peaceful space, which is basically to take away from the demonic mentality, the desire to enjoy away from Krishna. So, an offer to Krishna. All right, we all finish here. Any comment or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Hi, Krishna. I'm wondering.
Bring it down in number 2, down.
I'm wondering, I'm not sure if you know the answer to this question, but like, how are these entities like appearing from the ocean? Are they just like rising to the top of the surface, or are they like walking out, or do they just like appear out of nowhere? Or I'm also wondering what led up to this pastime, how How do they know that the nectar is coming? Did someone tell them that the nectar is coming?
Correct. My understanding is that that was the thing. That's the treasure. That was when Lord Vishnu said, basically, you churn the ocean to bring the nectar of immortality, not to bring, you know, a horse, a cow, a tree, like that. There were other treasures that were going to come, but the treasure was the nectar of immortality. That was their focus. And the demons, you know, okay, oh, this is good. Nectar of immortality. They were very focused on the nectar of immortality. The fact that as soon as the nectar of immortality came from the hands of Dambantari, they snatched it. And the demigods were like freaking out because Lord Vishnu said, do not show, be very controlled. You know, the demons were like just waiting for that one. And as soon as appears, they snatch it. And they went, that's it, that was success. They celebrated the whole thing. This was the purpose. So that was the enticing thing. That's why they didn't have to do any truce with the demigods. Because they defeated the demigods. They did the truce because they needed the demigods. They hear, okay, why should I make a truce? Well, if you make a truce, you can churn the ocean, you combine both powers to churn the ocean, and then you bring the nectar of immortality. Oh, okay. Like that. For the benefit. But they have the idea, we don't want to share the nectar of immortality with these guys. We snatch it. And they did. And demigods were like, and then looking at Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu, I got it. He appeared as Mohini Murti and then took it back from the demons. You know, the demons just give it to her. So that's how the thing goes. So that was the enticing thing. How the treasures appears to me is just like, that, I don't know, you know, we can just, but the narration is that just appear. Yeah.
Okay. Just the connection about, like, the Bhagavad Gita and Krishna speaking about, like, the horse from this pastime. And so, just like kind of a comment question, it's like kind of cool the connection that, like, Krishna knew these pastimes. So, like, well, Krishna knows everything, but specifically, he like brought these up in the Bhagavad Gita, and like, I just think that's really interesting, like the connection between.
Yeah, these are eternal pastimes, you know, and there are unlimited universes. And then you limit your universes, there's, you know, this is just this universe in which, you know, this happening. But there's unlimited universe, and there's, who knows, you know, I mean, it takes different, a little variety here and there, but these are eternal pastimes. You know, there's a, in this particular universe, there's an ocean of milk where, you know, the island of Swetadweep is, which is a spiritual, a Vaikuntha planet within the universe where Lord Shirodakshai Vishnu resides. So, you know, and then that ocean is churned, but that ocean, I mean, the dimensions, and to imagine the whole thing is just impossible for a tiny brain, you know. But the fact is that we're talking about passing within this universe. But there's unlimited universes. So, and then not only that, the Bhagavad Gita, this narration of the Bhagavad Gita is Krishna spoken to the, you know, Vivashran, who was, you know, the sun god in, you know, almost the beginning of creation. So, with our linear time, we become bewildered. You know, this is a different frame of, you know, reality. And that's a problem that my wife was telling me that, you know, this, she goes to this, with Jainita, to this conferences, inter-religious dialogues, and then you have people that their only connection to the scriptures is through trying to understand it as a metaphorical, you know, type of thing, you know, allegories, you know, things. You know, but they're not real. It's just a way of saying it so you can get some spiritual message. But how can that exist? An ocean of milk. You know, that, you know, it have to be some allegorical story to give a message. And that's how they relate to scriptures. But we understand different. It's just, you know, we have our reality, okay, we have this time frame, but that doesn't exist, you know, that's just the reality of time, the spirit of time, that we, these tiny living entities in this tiny little planet, in this, you know, like thing is experiencing. But you know, there's a greater reality that is beyond our capacity. So yeah, difficult to understand and to picture, you know.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. Your last comment was actually going to relate it to my question of how different people take the scriptures as metaphorical. And I was just thinking on the point with Radha Raman, Prabhu usually says is that when we have newcomers, we should be conscious of them. And I was thinking, because of my brother, when he was a newcomer, he didn't understand all these stories. And if we're a newcomer, we may hear these stories. And after class, we may ask another devotee, is this like a trilogy of Lord of the Rings, or what? We hear ocean, this demon, that. And then the devotees tell us, oh, this is reality. And then we're out the door, maybe. Potentially. That's a potential. And so one particular aspect I appreciated in this regard, because this comes up all the time, is that, forgive me for forgetting the verse, but it's in the ninth canto, chapter 11. And it's regarding this same point. I forgot what verse is, I think it's 20-something. But basically it says, when Lord Rama built the floating bridge, obviously stones can't float, but it says when he built the stone bridge, a floating stone bridge across the sea, that wasn't actually his glories. That's not glorious. It basically says what constitutes his glories is his character. And the reason I appreciate this point is because we're not able to imitate these stories. We can't build a floating stone bridge or do this or do that, but we can't follow in the footsteps of the characters. And we see that good character and personal integrity is actually essential for everyone, even atheists to some degree, because you can't have a relationship with anyone. So my question is when we're preaching to others about these stories, and of course they may not believe them, because I remember when I was doing book distribution, I was speaking with one atheist, and he, from a distance, if somebody was watching that, the atheist, I'm not saying I'm a saint, but I was getting very mad because he wasn't agreeing with my points. And my brother was just looking at me laughing. And so when we try to convince people that, oh, you know, you're a rascal, you don't believe this story, you don't believe that, you know, that's also because we don't like the character. They seem like they have greater character than us. And a lot of times people go to atheism because sometimes they see that atheists have even better character than religionists. So when we're preaching these stories to people, what should be our mentality, you know, how should we present it? Because they may ask us questions about these appearing to be fictitious stories. So what is a person to do who has faith in the reality of it? But it seems like we should emphasize the character more, like whether you believe in it or not, it doesn't matter. Like the moral of the story.
If we have the choice to what to present, then we bet, you know, there will be things that are much more relatable. You know, one thing that I learned observing my Guru Maharaj preaching in different circumstances to people that have not much contact, previous contact with the philosophy, and is that he presents something that is very relatable to the person, to your audience. So, like I see, you know, him as an expert preacher, the thing that he takes into consideration first is what audience you have, and then he delivers something. Sometimes we may not have the choice. Circumstantially, we get in a situation that, you know, like you say, someone may walk into a Bhagavatam class and we're speaking about churning the ocean of milk. And then, okay, what is this ocean of milk? What does it mean? You know, like that. So how do we explain that? And one thing is that that similarly, in a very relatable way, you know, we can say something that they relate to relativity. You know, we can approach it. In other words, not necessarily trying to figure it out how to explain it, but I'm saying you can approach always according to the person capacity. You have to try to ascertain the person's capacity and being able to say something that is relatable as far as possible. If one goes on and start to basically deal with people according to my, you know, reality and things of how I understand things, you know, it may be a source of frustration to try to make the person take, you know, things as I see it. So that becomes a point of contention rather. So it's better just to strengthen people's, you know, sort of beliefs and in terms of, or at least religious beliefs like that. Or faith. You want to enhance people's faith. So, you know, you do it in a form that is relatable. I mean, that's something that I'm trying to follow in the footsteps of my Guru Maharaj when I see him preach. Jitendra Prabhu?
Yes, Prabhupada, I remember a friend of mine asking me, what is this Krishna consciousness? And I said, it's reality distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. So, you know, he said, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. You know, because his reality is steeped in illusion, you know. So you have to meet them at their own level, otherwise you're creating a disservice. And I was just thinking of, you know, the Greek tradition was describing things that are in relation with the Vedas, but in a different time, in a different set of names and stuff. One was the, they have a saying that says, beware of Greeks bearing gifts. You've heard that expression? Beware of Greeks bearing gifts. So they're offering gifts because, you know, the two parties want something. It was the Trojan horse. You remember that story? Yeah. Somewhat? There was the Spartans and the Athenians, and the Spartans were the fighters and the Athenians were the intellectual types. And so they were presenting this big, huge horse. And the Athenians, well, you know, they wanted the horse, so the horse was brought into the town, and then they accepted it, you know. And they were it was a huge horse, but then inside the horse was all these soldiers, and they came out, and then they, you know, the battle ensued. But that was an interesting story. So they say, beware of Greeks bearing gifts. But, you know, that was just kind of came to mind with the churning of the ocean, you know, because everybody wants something. And, you know, until we, Prabhupada says, until you know the truth, there's no real gain. So the material world is they're pushing so much illusion, you know. I mean, we have the highest truth, but till people come to a certain level, they can't accept it. The advertisers are very good in promoting their products due to deception and stuff. So as long as people are in ignorance, they can take advantage of them. But then we say, when one knows the truth, he knows there's no greater gain. So I don't know, those things just kind of came to mind with the Greeks. And then they're similar to the Aesop's fables, you know, which is a Greek tradition and stuff, which is similar to that one, the Pancha, you know, those stories in the Vedas.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's called?
Panchaka?
So they're almost similar. Yeah. So, you know, time, place, and circumstance, you know. But anyways, that just came to mind. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. This is the churning of the ocean of milk probably is one of the most famous, you know, stories, universal stories right there, stories in the universe that is narrated in the scriptures. It comes over and over and over. I think it's in several of the Puranas. It's in the Mahabharata, you know, it's in the Bhagavatam, like that. So it's a very important event that happens. So it's important to understand it as a, you know, this historical event, you know, and the significance of it.
They have a huge churning of the ocean in the Bangkok airport in Thailand. Nityananda Pran mentioned that, and then some other place has smaller ones, but the one in the airport in Bangkok, Thailand, is huge. You know, probably the size of this room, you know, the length.
Yeah, and the different in that culture, there's countries like Bangkok, and, you know, they're very connected to the Vedic culture. They have Aryabhatta. There is an elephant that is also worshipped there. Okay, I think the name is Erwin or something like that. It's also depicted, you know, Aryabhatta. So, you know, all these connections are there. Important. All right, we stop here. Thank you so much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.